पुर्यं प्रज्वारसं सृष्टा पुरापालो यवनो पुरुधायतनो ग्रस्तायं कलकन्यया पुर्यं प्रज्वारसं सृष्टा पुरपालोन्वताप्यता यवनपुरुधायतनो ग्रस्तायं कलकन्यया पुर्यं प्रज्वारसं सृष्टा पुरपालोन्वताप्यता ग्रस्तायं कलकन्यया पुर्यं प्रज्वारसं सृष्टा Mothers, Yavana,
by the Yavanas, Upurudha attacked Ayatana, his abode, Grastayam, when seized, Kalakanyaya, by the daughter of time, Puryam, the city, Prajwara Samshrishtaha, being approached by Prajwara, Purapala, the city superintendent, Anvatapyata became also very much aggrieved. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: the city's superintendent of police, the serpent, saw that the citizens were being attacked by Kalakanya, and he became very aggrieved to see his own residence set ablaze after being attacked by the Yavanas. Purport: the living entity is covered by two different types of bodies, the gross body and the subtle body. At death, we can see that the gross body is finished, but actually, the living entity is carried by the subtle body to another gross body. The so-called scientists of the modern age cannot see how the subtle body is working in carrying the soul from one body to another. This subtle body has been figuratively described as a serpent, or the city's police superintendent. When there is fire everywhere, the police superintendent cannot escape either. When there is security in an absence of fire in the city, the police superintendent can impose his authority upon the citizens, but when there is an all-out attack on the city, he is rendered useless. As the life air was ready to leave the gross body, the subtle body also began to experience pain. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyan Tamiranda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshunum Ditamina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitamina Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mayam Dadati Swabadantikam Vanjakaputuru Vyashtra Kripa Sindhivere Vacha Patita Nam Pavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedar Hari Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, what happens at the time of death is being described in these verses that we're hearing. Was being mentioned here by Srila Prabhupada in the purport is that the soul in this material world has two types of bodies or coverings, a gross body and a subtle body. At the time of death, the gross body is completely destroyed, but the subtle body is not destroyed until the time of liberation. So we carry the subtle body, as Krishna describes in the Gita. We carry this. The soul carries its different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries the aroma. So this analogy is nice because air does not smell good or smell bad. It carries a particular aroma, and the aroma is different from the air. So in the same way, the subtle body, or to say the soul, is different from the subtle body, but it's carrying various conceptions from one body to another. And in that way, he gets a particular type of ear, a particular type of eye. In other words, he gets a particular type of body in his next life. a particular set of senses is the description in the Gita. And they're all grouped about the mind. That means the mind is the center of the senses. So he's being mentioned here as the superintendent, particularly the subtle body is the superintendent. So long as the body is healthy, then the subtle body, particularly the mind, is able to exercise its authority over the body. In conjunction with the sense objects, then he's able to, how you say, force, oblige the senses to pursue material sense gratification. And this way, the soul remains bound up. Or let's say the treasure of the soul is stolen. What is that treasure? The treasure of satisfaction. That's how it works, because the mind enters the sense objects as contemplation. We all have this experience. We contemplate sense objects all the time. No? We have this experience. And the sense objects enter into the mind as desires. This is the relationship of the material mind with the material sense objects. So then that combination basically forms a knot of misconception. There's a misconception that is already there, given by the modes of material nature, but then by this constant contemplating on the sense objects, and then the sense objects entering the mind in the form of desires, then this knot is made tighter and tighter and tighter. And as a result, the subtle body continues to force the senses to pursue material sense gratification. And this way, maybe despot is the word that's coming to mind. Despot? Despot means like a leader who, an authoritarian, like Hitler, who forces his rule over person in a very oppressive sort of way. So the mind is like that. The mind is like a Hitler. We all have Hitlers for mind. And it's forcing the citizens in this regard, I think refers to the senses, the abilities. It forces our citizens in the form of our senses to pursue degrading sense gratification. And in this way, the treasure of the heart, that treasure being satisfaction, is stolen from the soul. And in this way, life after life, he's being carried in this very depressing situation. So then what's being mentioned here is that when death is striking, especially in, it's being mentioned here, fever, kalakanya, old age is striking, then the mind, the senses, the citizens become completely incapacitated. They're not able to do anything. And as a result, the Hitler of our mind is not able to force the senses into material sense gratification. And as a result, the word that's being used here is anvatapyata. As a result, the mind becomes very much aggrieved. He laments, oh, I'm not able to control the senses anymore. Force them into material sense gratification like that. And he goes on lamenting. Of course, at the time of death, this is, whole life is like this, actually. From the time old age begins to strike, it is a life of augmented lamentation. The whole material world, we should know, is a life of lamentation from beginning to end. They say from the womb to the tomb, the whole program is a life of lamentation. And the reason for that being is because we have no power to protect ourselves from threefold miseries. So therefore, if sometimes people say, I'll work really hard and become happy. It's a very popular idea. I was working 8 hours in maintaining, but now because the economy is down, I'll work 12 hours to maintain my house and all these things like that. It's a very popular idea that by working hard, I'll become more and more happy. But to be real, if we were really in control of our destiny, who would bring misery to themselves? If we really had the power to control our happiness, then who in their right mind would bring misery to themselves? So this is, of course, most of the jivas were not that thoughtful because we were too busy engaged in sense gratification to think. But if we were actually thoughtful, we would see that we're not able to protect ourselves from the threefold miseries. So from the very beginning, it's a life of lamentation. But as old age begins to strike and the senses become, the citizens in this analogy, becomes completely weak in their ability to enjoy sense gratification. Just like, suppose, you know, you're very old, teeth are very, very loose. You have to be very careful what you eat. Suppose someone comes and brings you a cookie. Now, you want to enjoy that cookie, you know, especially, suppose it's a very hard cookie. I don't know, it's a very nice cookie, but it's hard. And even like a vanilla cookie or something, I don't know. A wafer or something. Oreos. An Oreo cookie. So someone brings you in the old age an Oreo cookie, and you smell that cookie. So the mind, as a superintendent, is forcing, take it now. But then you don't have the teeth to do so. If you, you know, stick your teeth in the Oreo cookie and pull it out, your teeth might come out with it, you know, because we don't have the capacity. So then one begins to lament all the more. Lamentation is augmented in the old age. And this way you can go through so many examples to see. And then, it increases. Because as we've been hearing, as disease starts to affect the body, the mind becomes more and more depressed, Srila Prabhupada was describing. Not only the burden of the diseased body is there, but the burden of anxiety created in the mind due to attachment to the body makes the experience all the more lamentable. Just like Arjuna on the battlefield, he actually has a physically healthy body, but because his mind is in a mode of great lamentation, he's, I think they call this, they have some technical name in psychology, I think they call it psychosomatic or something, where a problem in the mind is so intense that it causes physical problems. So you see Arjuna, he's so much having a distressed mind that he's unable to hold his Gandiva bow, which is very significant. I'm not going to describe the story. But he's unable to hold his Gandiva bow, his senses are drying up, etc. So his mind, even though he has a very healthy body, his mind is causing this very lamentable situation. So imagine you have the burden of having a diseased body, and then on top of that, the anxiety created in the mind due to attachment to the body. So the position becomes all the more lamentable or grieving. And so the soul, of course, attached to this whole situation, begins to grieve very heavily. And then as death is approaching and one sees all his attachments about to be totally annihilated, then, sometimes a person probably just faints in thinking about it. Just like Arjuna, the issue on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is not so much that he has to fight with the people he has to fight with, because previously he had done so many occasions. As a eunuch, he had fought with them and defeated them. It wasn't a big deal. At Draupadi Swayamvar, he had also fought with them, and it wasn't a big deal. But at the Battle of Kurukshetra, he was finally able to gain some perception that all my attachments are about to be annihilated. So because we so strongly identify with our attachments, one feels as if I'm about to be annihilated. It's like when a person is attached to his car, and the car gets hit, that really, it really hits the heart heavy. Or maybe a better example is money. If you have a lot of money on you, even if it's not even a lot, $20. If you lose that $20, the whole mind will be so much grieving. Where is the $20? And all your energy, suppose you lost it before Mangalarti started. Then the whole Mangalarti period, you'll be thinking about that $20 only. Because you're so attached. When it's so attached. So you'd be samsara dava nalalida loka. You're just contemplating $20, $20, $20. And not contemplating. Even if you tried to contemplate the meaning of the prayer, you'll be praying to the spiritual master, please bless me that my $20 shows up. Because of attachment is so strong. And that's just a very simple example. So imagine in this lifetime, we've accumulated unlimited attachments. And what death is basically doing is wiping all of them out in one stroke. That's what Arjuna was experiencing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Everyone being wiped out in one stroke. It's just like, okay, if your father dies 1 year and then a few years later your mother dies and then a few years later like that, then you might be able to, you can maybe tolerate a little bit easy. But if everyone gets wiped out in one stroke, how much painful that would be when one is very much attached. So that was Arjuna's situation. And that is the situation at the time of death. Everything is going to be wiped out in one stroke. And it causes the soul to very deeply, let's say, cry, lament. But unfortunately, all that lamentation does for the soul is take him to his next material body. That's all he gets for his crying. All the crying you can do, you just get another material body. So in the material world, this is the actual situation. It is miserable from beginning to end. And simply crying about it or talking about it doesn't change the problem. So we'll be so that's the gist of what Srila Prabhupada is saying here about the gross and subtle bodies and what happens at the time of death. The so-called scientists of the modern age cannot see how this is happening, because the modern so-called scientists of the modern age cannot see anything. Not only they cannot see that this is happening, they cannot perceive anything properly. And as a result, we see what is happening to the society at large. So then we should be knowing that if the sun is in your eyes, you should move in another spot where the sun is not shining. Now that you hear a class like this, then we would not know if you were sleeping or not. He did the same thing 2 months ago. He put the chatter over the head and said, oh, the sun is in my eyes. Common sense tells you move into a place where the sun is not shining. Not that you cover the face. That is not. You know, tangential point, right when Prahlad Maharaj was beginning to instruct his student friends, this is at the last verse of chapter 5 of the 7th canto. You can read it. Right before he was about to begin his instructions to them, it said that all the boys had their eyes and their heart fixed on Prahlad Maharaj. So maybe that helps give us some at least the eyes should be there. You know, many times we may struggle with the heart being there because of our conditioned situation, but at least the eyes should be there. Minimum, the minimum standard, the eyes should be on the speaker and not on the floor. Or not within, you know, sleeping like that. It should be on the speaker, ideally. So we should be knowing that one of the principles of sadhana bhakti, there are 64 regular principles of sadhana bhakti. One of those 64 regular principles is that one should not become overwhelmed by lamentation. That's one of the 64 regular principles of devotional service. Sounds pretty tough, doesn't it? I was myself shocked when I read that as a principle for a beginner. His mind should not, because if the mind is overwhelmed with lamentation, then there is no question of thinking of Krishna. There is no question of thinking of Krishna when the mind is overwhelmed with lamentation. So therefore, given the whole material life from beginning to end is a life of lamentation, we have a lot of time to practice trying to transcend material conception, which is causing a lamentable situation. The situation is itself not lamentable. It is our attachment to it due to the Bali concept. So we have a whole lifetime to practice transcending. Many times we lament, you know, oh, someone didn't give me the proper respect. That is lamentable. My family members don't appreciate what I'm doing. You know, for those of us who came to devotional service, we found that to be very lamentable. Oh, my mother doesn't appreciate. My father doesn't appreciate. Like, that's going to get us out of the material world. You know, oh, thank you, Mom, you appreciate what I'm doing. Now I have my next body waiting for me. Thanks to your appreciation, my attachment to that. We lament how we couldn't get a job. We lament that the house got repossessed by the government. And this way, we have so many things to lament about in the material world. This lamentation causes our mind to be filled up with the material concepts, which will then carry the soul to the next material body. So we have to transcend material lamentation in order to be able to come out of the material world. Of course, the way that is done is by becoming self-realized, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Nashochachina Kankriti. Krishna also says in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, the very outset of the Bhagavad Gita, what is that? Ashochan of Ashochastvam, Pragamadam Shabashase Gatasums, Agatasumscha, Nonu Sochanti Pandita. That those who are wise persons, wise, possessing wisdom, then they do not lament for the body in its living or its dead condition. Many times we're doing both. When the body dies, we really lament, and when the body's living, we're lamenting. We're lamenting about how so many people are suffering in Africa or other parts of the world, or how someone is suffering in Chicago, how someone is suffering in Rogers Park, whatever, we're lamenting. But if we don't transcend this lamentation, then such lamentation becomes a rope binding us to the material world. So there's and our process means, what I'm trying to say is that only when we become Brahma Bhuta can we actually even begin to properly render devotional service. Even sadhana, even self-realization means just a basic realization that I'm not this body is required to properly perform sadhana bhakti and come to a perfectional stage of pure devotional service. Without, Srila Prabhupada has himself told this in the chapter 3 of Nectar of Devotion, without becoming Brahma Bhuta, then one is more or less basically lacking very minimum adhikar for advancing in sadhana, because we will not be able to transcend the effect of duality hitting us constantly. Because duality is the constant, the constant accosting of duality keeps the soul ever bewildered. The only way we can transcend duality is by self-realization. That means understanding that I'm not a product of this world, I'm not a product of matter. So in our process of Krishna consciousness, our self-realization, that means just a basic understanding that I'm really not this body, is realized by devotional service to Krishna. Mamchayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. That means, Srila Prabhupada describes this in chapter 14 Bhagavad Gita, that a person is so busy and absorbed in his devotional service that he forgets the bodily concept of life. That's how Srila Prabhupada describes it in chapter 14, verses 22 through 25. I believe those series of verses are there like that. That he's so absorbed in relationship to a supremely spiritual entity through connection with the parampara that he does not have time to, descend to the bodily concept of life. So our process is devotional service for getting that realization. So an assistant to that realization to help us overcome the material lamentation, then there is such a thing as spiritual lamentation that is existing even in the stage of sadhana bhakti. And that is described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Duradhaivam Indrisami Hajani Nanuragaha. That despite so many benedictions of the holy name of Krishna, you know, Chaito Darpanam, Namnam Akari Bahuda, so about 8 or 9 benedictions are mentioned. There are no hard and fast rules for chanting. That's nice. There's possessing all spiritual shaktis. It purifies the heart. It allows one to experience ever-expanding bliss, etc. So many benedictions are there in this chanting of the name of Krishna. But despite knowing all these things, Durdhaivam, he's lamenting that I actually have no anuraga. I have no attraction for it. I'm ever negligent and cultivating the happiness, the bliss of chanting Harinam. So then this lamentation is there. All of it is not. The second verse of Sri Shastrakam is not a very high-standing verse. It's a verse that deals with basically anarthana vritti. That's how the acharyas describe it. It's the second verse is simply, in other words, what is going to help us overcome our anarthas is when through the process of hearing and erecting proper spiritual conceptions, we come to the point of genuinely lamenting that we have no taste for the holy name to such a degree that I find time to lament about everything else but the fact that I have no taste for the holy name. And in this way, binding myself more and more to the material world. Unless we come to this is just a basic realization in sadhana, that when we realize this, then this type of lamentation can help us move through our anarthas and actually attain the stage of anartha nirvritti. Anartha nirvritti is, there's a difference between the categorical stage of anartha nirvritti and then actually going through getting purified of the anarthas. So in order to move us through our anarthas, then this type of spiritual lamentation, which will help us attain the threshold of nishtha, which is a self-realized state. A Brahma Bhuta means nishtha means a state where you're not going to be impacted by duality. It doesn't mean you don't see duality, but you're not going to be impacted by duality in the same way you were impacted by duality when we were not fixed in our bhajan, anishtha bhakti. At the stage of nishtha bhakti, when some duality comes, we're down and out, and it takes us about 2-3 weeks to recover. But the stage of nishtha, when you are impacted by hit by duality, you're fixed in your service of Krishna. Even though it may impact, you won't descend to negligence of your devotional service. So in order to come to that threshold of nishtha, then the spiritual lamentation has to be awakened in the heart. That's how Mahaprabhu moved to the third verse of Shishashakam. Before he moved to the third verse of Trinadapi Sunichena, we're trying to become very humble Vaishnavs. That type of humility really begins to manifest authentically at the stage of nishtha. Before that, we need to have the humility of admitting to ourselves that we really don't have any attraction for Krishna consciousness. That in, not just like the, you know how devotees, we like to say, oh, Prabhu, I'm a neophyte devotee, but inside the heart, we're thinking I'm very advanced. And many times, it's because when we first came to Krishna consciousness, there are a couple of things you catch very quickly. The dress and the jargon of the devotees, especially where it's sense gratification. And when you start to live around devotees, you start to learn words like Prabhu. And then another thing you start to learn is, you know, let me touch your lotus feet. I'm the most fallen. These are some of the jargon that we learn when we come in association with devotees. So then when we meet devotees, they say, Prabhu, how are you? Oh, I am so fallen. I practically don't see how I can be saved, because we see how we read the scriptures or hear about them. Like that. That's all crap. Before we could even really get to that stage, you know, it'll do us very well to just honestly admit that I really have no attraction to Krishna consciousness. I have no taste for the name. I have no taste for hearing the shastras. I have no taste for really associating with the devotees. That is called durdaivam. And also, a part of that durdaivam, as mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is I do have a lot of taste for fault-finding. I'm very envious. I have a lot of attachment to things which are not related to Krishna, including my attachment to family oftentimes, etc. All these things are mentioned. Then unless we begin to lament that, then we won't be able to actually engender the Trinada Peace with Nietzsche, not standard of humility. Try to understand that in the Shishashakam prayers, the whole process of devotional service is going on by an increase of humility. When Mahaprabhu, if you were to read the chapter 20 of Shishashakam, you'll discover there that whenever Mahaprabhu, before he would say the next verse, there would be a verse by Kaviraj Goswami describing how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's humility increased. And when his humility increased, then he would, you know, recite the next verse, and then there would be a purport to that verse. And then it would say his humility increased. And then he would recite the next verse, and then it would be a purport to that verse. And then it would say his humility increased. So the whole Krishna consciousness process is going on by increasing levels of humility. So to actually understand what is humility is not so easy, because it's not a blanket statement. It's increasing levels of humility going on at different standards of devotional service, at different levels of devotional, pure devotional achievement. So there's now like a blanket statement of how humility is going to be manifesting at all the various stages of evolvement. But at our stage of before the attainment of Nishta, when we're still trying to get fixed in our practices of Krishna consciousness, then the humility that is required is the lamentation that I don't have taste for the, you know, holy name of Krishna, etc., as I've already described. And that type of lamentation is purifying. It is not a debilitating thing. It should not become a debilitating, I have no taste. I might as well give up Krishna consciousness. It's not like that. Krishna is described in the Bhagavatam that the devotee, he is, he's got faith, jata shadama katasu, nirvina sabra karmasu, veda dukatmakam kaman, prityage hi anishvara. He has taste for hearing. He knows everything the material world leads to material sense gratification. He knows material sense gratification leads to suffering, but still he's not able to give it up. And so Krishna advises that my devotee should remain happy and continue to perform his devotional service with faith and determination. So this lament, even though he's Jushamana Chatat Kama, even though he sometimes is engaged in sense gratification, he sincerely laments or repents, is the language Krishna uses in Uddhava Gita. He sincerely repents. So this Durdaivam Indrisam is that sincere repentance that I have no attraction for the actual thing, and therefore I have time for every little minor petty thing. You know, and it just like consumes the I have time for writing long articles on Dandavats, or I have time for reading them. You know, sometimes, I'm lamenting, oh, this one fell down. Oh, this thing happened. I have so much time for those things. I have no time for this actual lamentation that's going to purify the heart and bring me to a stage of humility which allows one to constantly chant the holy name of Krishna and constantly hear and engage in devotional service to Krishna, Kirtana Yasadhari. So, otherwise, if we are not able to grieve about these things, and thereby grieving and protecting ourselves from getting absorbed in things that are really not that important, then what happens at the time of death is the material lamentation that we've done our whole entire life will also victimize us at the time of death, and certainly the next body is waiting for us. We should not artfully dream up that without really following the regulative principles of devotional service. There are 64 regulative principles of devotional service. And following all of them and really gaining the higher taste, gaining the experience, we shouldn't artfully dream up that just on the mercy of Sri Guru that I'm going to be going back. That is a highly rare thing that happens. It's called as Ati Prasad. You know, Ati Prasad is where Ati Prasad means extreme mercy. In other words, very rarely happening. So we shouldn't artfully dream up that we don't have to actually transcend these things. Or due to a lack of faith, thinking that these things cannot be transcended. Sometimes that is also a problem because we don't have faith that we can transcend these things. So then as a result of not having that faith, but also wanting the perfection, you see the situation, we don't have the faith, but we want the perfection. So then we artfully dream up that simply on the strength of someone else's Krishna consciousness, we're going to be doing everything. But we should know that we have to also become Krishna conscious. I mean, it is important. It is a natural kind of understanding that the books cannot be Krishna conscious for us, or nor can someone else be Krishna conscious for us. We have to be Krishna conscious for ourselves. And the mercy that is coming from Guru is the process of how we can do so. So if we sincerely take it to heart, then even a moment is sufficient to actually understand how to be progressive and actually, attain that experience. Otherwise, then the material lamentation, which is being mentioned here, avatapyata, the mind becoming very much aggrieved, the mind filled up with so much lamentation will not be able to think of Krishna. So we have to practice and, erect in our heart the spiritual form of lamentation, which is, can be there even at a immature state of devotional service, where we start to gain insight. Just by hearing process, we gain insight, oh, that I really don't have any attraction for, you know, as we've mentioned, devotional service, devotional association, holy names, Shastra, etc. Even prasadam. Even prasadam. We think we have attraction to prasadam, but then when that bitter melon comes out or something like that, some neem juice, suppose here's some neem juice, Prabhu Prasad. We'll be just saying that, no, Krishna didn't accept that. He doesn't like neem. We don't even have attraction to the prasad. Mahaprasada Govinde, Namo Brahmane Vaishnave, Swapa Punyam Vatam Rajan, Vishwashwana Vajayate. We say this prayer every day. How many of us ever contemplate the purport? Vishwasho Naivajayate means we have no faith. Without faith, how you will have attraction? If you have no faith in anything, we have to speak of attraction. So what is that we have no faith in? Mahaprasad, Govinda, the deity form of the Lord, Nam, and Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. That's what the prayer means. We're meditating on it every day before we honor prasadam. Probably because our meditation is so quick. Mahaprasad, Govinda, Nam. So then we don't get time to let the gravity of that statement enter inside the heart, that we really don't have any attraction. So then that admittance is required for moving forward in devotional service. Otherwise, the material lamentation will certainly overcome one at the time of death, especially mentioned here. And then the only result of such lamentation is another material body. Of course, because we've practiced Krishna consciousness, certainly we'll be able to continue in our next life, but who knows how difficult the conditions may be in the next life. Kali Yuga is, after all, getting uglier and uglier and uglier. And God forbid we take birth in Swargaloka, and then by the time we come back to Earth planet, Lord Chaitanya's movement has already disappeared. That is always, for me, a scarier scenario. Because Srila Prabhupada said many of my disciples will go to Swargaloka. And I was like, man, that's horrible. Then by the time they make it back down to Earth planet, the whole Kali Yuga would have probably passed by. Lord Chaitanya's movement disappeared. So these are some simple thoughts there. Did anyone want to ask anything or comment on anything? Okay. Okay, anyone can say anything. Yeah.
Yes, thank you for your class, Prabhu. How does a person know for sure that they're going to go back to Godhead? Is there any telltale symptoms or that, wow, this person is going back home?
You mean, can we tell if someone else is going back home? If we're going to go for ourselves, back home, back to Godhead. I'm definitely going back home, back to Godhead. I don't know about you. How is that going to look or sound? Of course, in the beginning, we have to have that confidence that we're going to be able to attain the spiritual world. That is called ashabanda, you know, the hope, you know, hope against hope, that even though I'm so fallen, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, by the mercy of my guru, then all things are possible. Srila Prabhupada said impossible is the word in the Fool's Dictionary. So even the very fact that we can follow four regular principles is itself evidence that the impossible is achievable, to be real. Many of us may have been indulging in all types of mindful activities. And like for me, when I joined Krishna consciousness, I remember thinking, how will I ever give up Buffalo Joe's chicken? And many of you may not be able to relate to that, but I know some of you know there was a chicken store called Buffalo Joe's. It's still there, the one I used to go to also. And I remember when I first read Prabhupada's books and I was hearing the vegetarian thing, I was like, how would it be possible to give up Buffalo Joe's chicken? You know, I mean, this is nice philosophy, but it seems very impossible. And of course, for those who are indulging in other such things like illicit sex, and basically when they read no illicit sex, yeah, very difficult thing. But somehow or other, by the association of Mahaprabhu and the power of the spiritual master and devotional sangha, then that was achievable. So we might be thinking, just as I thought that was completely impossible, but by mercy it was attainable. So also, why should not be possible then for me to go back to the spiritual world? I mean, that is the beginning. That faith has to be there. That's called Shraddha. That otherwise, what is the point of the whole affair? Why chant every day if we not think we can get the attainment of our chanting? So it begins with Shraddha. And then as one begins to make more and more spiritual advancement, then Of course, Dharyat is a particular very important principle in this regard. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says Dharyat means one thinks that I'll go back home, back to Godhead this life, next life, or even after 100 lifetimes. But the Lord must give his mercy to me because that is his promise. He says when such a devotee has this type of faith, then that is called Dharyat or patience. So then that is the beginning. That as one matures, his confidence is born of direct perception of Krishna, whatever that means. I mean, it really means you seeing Krishna at least minimally within the heart. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santasa daiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achinta guna sarupam. Even at the stage of bhava, it is mentioned bhakti paresha anubhavo virakti anyatra chesha trika ekakala prapadya manasha yatashnatashus tushri pushishurabhayo nugasam. Just as when you're eating, you've experienced nourishment, satisfaction, and detachment from the eating also. So also for one who is, prapadya manasha means progressively moving forward in pure devotional practices, then he gains three things, devotion, and then paresha anubhava means direct perception of the absolute truth. As Krishna has also told this in the Gita, pratyaksha savagaman dharmyam, it gives direct perception of the truth, this devotional service, bhakti. Pure devotion gives direct perception of the truth. So one is able to see within their heart the Supreme Lord. So that is already, in one sense, back home, back to God, in one sense. So the confidence is born of direct perception of spiritual reality, which is gained through the sadhana of hearing and chanting about Krishna. But interestingly enough, for those who will be having such pure devotional realization, then we will be noticing in their character a sense of, I'm not going to make it. You know, this Ashabandha is just described that basically if Krishna doesn't save me, then I have no taste, there's a verse in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, I can't think of it right now, the Sanskrit, but basically saying I have no attachment for hearing chanting, I'm not a powerful Vaishnava, I have no strength in mystic yoga practices and all these things. Only thing I have working for me right now is this great hope that you're going to deliver me, and this hope is giving me pain, you know, despite my disqualifications. So, in other words, an advanced devotee is giving it. It is always Krishna's prerogative whether or not we're going to be delivered. So as we improve in our devotional mentality, then that becomes less of an important issue in the sense that we are more interested in seeing what will bring happiness to Krishna. So if it will bring happiness to Krishna that I remain in the material world forever in his services, then that becomes more interesting for us when we're actually developing a devotional attitude than the concern about am I going to go back home, back to Godhead. So the point I'm saying is that it becomes important for us to move forward and our mentality of service to Krishna. Real service to Krishna does not entail Krishna reciprocating with me in the form of take me back home, back to Godhead. Real service attitude towards Krishna means whatever Krishna wants, even if that means going to hell. So when that devotional mentality is sincerely manifesting in our mind, then we may be having more confidence that in one sense we have already attained the spiritual kingdom of God, because the mentality will be indicative of that. Someone else wanted to ask something? No? Yeah.
I was just reading the last sentence of the purport, and then, you know, couldn't help but look at the next verse for tomorrow, you know, and, you know, maybe I shouldn't, you know, jump ahead, but it has the serpent, you know, and then it's a little confusing because did you ever hear the serpent snake or the snake bird? And then it talks about the serpent climbing the tree, and then, well, the serpent is the first ones that are killed. But it seems, you know, and then it says here, it says the serpent has limbs, So that must be a different kind of serpent, because I mean, I always thought a serpent is just a vertebrate that somehow or other makes its way through the world, you know, without hands or legs. But you've heard of the snake bird, you know, that's also a little confusing for us 20th century people, you know. But could you, you know, enlighten us on that, Prabhu?
I think not.
Okay, well.
Okay, anything else? Sorry, I have no comment on that.
Hare Krishna. On the heels of what Vaishnava Sivananda Prabhu was saying, Mother Dhanakali Mataji was saying that going back to Godhead means a couple different things. Prabhupada was clarifying at, like, say, towards the end of his life. And my question is that if you can elaborate on this, she was telling me something that, this is what I'm unclear about, the platform. If someone's sincerely practicing, but say they're not exactly fixed yet, but they can think of Krishna at the time of death, or Lord Chaitanya helps them to remember Krishna, that they can go to some training ground, and then, you know, then go from there. I wanted to know if you could talk about that at all, because it seems like there's a lot of ways to go back to Godhead.
No, you just do devotional service. Then if you're one leaves the body at an immature stage of devotional service, then he can take birth again in the material world and get trained up at the Gurukul by a bona fide spiritual master. The training ground is usually discussed is a high level of devotional achievement. Like the sages at Dandakaranya Forest, when they saw Lord Ram and they had conjugal desires, and Ram said, well, you know, I'm just with Sita, you know, so if you want to have that exchange with me, you have to take birth in Krishna's lila. And so then they went to a training ground in Krishna's lilas in order to understand how to do that. That's a very mature stage of devotional service, and that's not even, everyone will not go do that, and that's not required also for everyone to do that per se. But if we are not mature in our devotional service, then we would probably take birth in the material world again. Unless we got some Ati Prasad, then there's a good chance we might take birth in the material world again. And then get the association of some devotees and continue to make progress from there. That training and getting proper spiritual conceptions and making further progress like that. Don't think this is the first life all of us have done devotional service. Not that we should be thinking, even if you were to think, I've done devotional service so many lifetimes before, obviously didn't do much good. So even if you wanted to be puffed up and think like that, obviously you didn't do such a good job. Therefore, again, having this horrible body with this horrible mental situation. So obviously, even if we can say I did devotional service previously, we don't have much to show for it but a rotting corpse. That's it. So, but we should not think this is the first life we have done devotion. It is to take up sadhana bhakti seriously, then according to the next devotion, what is required for doing that is attraction. And it says that attraction is born from previous life engagement in devotional service. So obviously we've done some devotional service before, but we didn't make it. So this is obviously not Boma Vrindavan training ground. For, you know, back, this is, by the grace of the Lord, I got the association of the devotees, and I'm able to continue practical training and getting proper spiritual conceptions, trying to evolve, gain spiritual taste, etc. So that should be the basic understanding like that.
You mentioned a type of mercy. I don't remember what the word was you just used. It says it's extraordinarily rare. We shouldn't count on it. What about praying for that type of mercy?
That is not a pure devotional prayer. That is business relationship with Krishna.
That's
business.
Business relationship.
Business as usual, as we've been doing since time immemorial. Our business is to pray for service. Prahlad Maharaj, he prays in his prayers for Lord Nrisimhadev that the Lord can never do anything inauspicious for his devotee. He would never do anything inauspicious for his devotee. So he was asking Lord Nrisimhadev, why are you tempting me with all this material sense gratification? You know, you're just tempting me, even though I'm already inclined because I'm a demon. So why are you tempting me? And then Prahlad says, actually, you're doing this is actually because you want to see, you wanted me to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee in the material world. In other words, you wanted to tempt me with all these things so I could reject them and show what is the real standard of devotional service. So it'll do us well to study these things. Like Mahaprabhu used to hear that Prahlad Maharaj pastime 100 times from Gadara Pandit, and then Dhruva pastime 100 times, and then again 100 times Prahlad Maharaj, and then again 100 times Dhruva pastime. Why? So we can gain some insight on what is the real standard. Business will never be very satisfying. Because Krishna is, after all, God. So he's independent. So oftentimes we'll find ourselves very much frustrated because we think that many of us have a karma mimamsa idea of God. This karma mimamsa idea means, like Krishna describes in the 10th canto to his father, Nanda Baba, he's making the point that, you know, karma mimamsa, they believe there is no God, it's all karma. But even if there is a God, he's ultimately dependent upon me doing something and then reciprocating with whatever sacrifice I've done. Therefore, God is just like an appendage to my karmic activity. So many of us have this karma mimamsa idea of Krishna also. I've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and therefore Krishna must do like this. Because the demigods are obliged, if we do sacrifice properly, then they are attendants of karma. This is described in the Bhagavatam. They must give. But Krishna is independent. He is God, after all. So if you want to approach God with trying to oblige him to some basically material, sense gratificatory conception, and Krishna will not reciprocate, he may. It's his own desire. But if he doesn't, then what? Then you will stop your devotional service. So then, better we pray properly. We learn from Srila Prabhupada and from the Bhagavatam how to offer our prayers to Krishna. And that prayer, Hare Krishna, is a prayer for service. That's it. So, like that, we have to improve in that understanding. Not in improving the gimme, 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 gimme. That will never do. That will never help us. That will make us take another birth. Because we'll be lamenting. Oh, I didn't get that Ati Prasad. And Lord Chaitanya's Lila, so many people just when seeing Lord Chaitanya, they would get ecstatic love of Godhead. Why doesn't that can't happen to me? We're envious. Mind filled up with envy and all these things. That is not a very good thing. We have to learn how to pray. Is there anyone else who wants to say anything? Acharya Nishtabhu.
I was appreciating the point about the misery of old age, something that we may not be thinking about too much, but in some of the discussion we've been having lately, we explained that soul is undergoing so much trauma that one of the most amazing things is that he's not imparting that. He'll rather encourage other living entities in materialistic life. So I was just wondering, what would be the cause of that? I mean, if one is actually undergoing such a misery, like old people or maybe people that are leaving their bodies, you go to visit them. I don't know, they may or may not express, if they're actually experiencing such suffering, it seems like they would immediately advise or have some profound realizations, yet sometimes it seems like they just kind of accept or something. I was just getting a lot of I was just thinking deeply more when you were mentioning that point today. The process of old age and the misery of that experience.
Well, see, everyone is being conducted by the mold of material nature. That means, just like, this is like a puppet, as the picture in Gita demonstrates. So he's not even doing anything, he's just being conducted by the mold of material nature. So also those who have yet to actually surrender to Krishna and transcend the influence of the molds, they're just doing something like a zombie. Without any actual cognition of what they're doing. Just like, what is a good example of some things that we say without actual, how are you? This is a good one. In the modern world, especially before, devotees, we may try to actually mean it at least every now and again. But in the mature world, we used to say, "How are you?" But it wasn't. It was just done as a matter of routine without any cognition. Like I always joke about that. When I used to say, "I'm suffering. Can you help me?" And because it was like a wiring went wrong. Like, why did you say that? One guy told me that was disrespectful when I said like that. He said, "You're supposed to say how I'm fine, then you ask me how I am." And so it's like without any cognition, just doing something. Or here are some other statements that are really popular. All men are created equal. A lot of people just say this without ever even really thought about it. I was at UIC in the distributing book, and one boy said, "All men are equal, created equal." I said, "No, they're not." He was like taking, why, you know, like he got immediately like on the defensive. I said, "I disagree. All men are not created equal." And then I gave my reasoning. And then he said, I never thought about that. I said, "Exactly." So in the same way that we make statements without ever having cognition of what we're saying, in the same way the moles of nature are conducting all the jivas in the mature world, and they have no cognition of actually what is going on. That even Krishna has made this point in Gita, ukramatam sitam vapi bhujanam vagunavitam. What is that? Vimuda nanupashanti. He makes this point that they're under the spell of the modes of nature, and they cannot see what is happening. They cannot see how they got in that situation. They cannot see what situation they're creating for themselves in the future. So they're just doing something. Just like I joked about that one time when Prahlad was putting mats on the prasadam cart, and then another Prabhupada and I were talking, and he looked over and he said, "Prahlad, are you just doing something?" And he said, "Yes." Just like that. He was like, nothing like particular. He was just needed to do something, so he just started putting mats on the cart. So without much cognition. So we're just doing activities in the material world without ever thinking about it. Who is thinking about the results of their material sense gratification program? That means that those activities are just being conducted by the modes. So then, even though someone is suffering tremendously, like I shared with you, a devotee was sharing me how miserable householder life was. And he was going through the details of why it's miserable. And I was, this is very encouraging for my brahmacharya ashram. And then he said, "But I recommend everyone should do it." And I was like, that is just a mode of ignorance speaking. So it is completely mode of ignorance. Just the modes are just making him to say something. And then I was like, "Did you even think about what you're just suggesting to me? And how just, that's just, even from a materialistic point of view, that's totally illogical what you just said. To delineate the miseries and then suggest that I also participate in that." That means that we're just being conducted by the modes of material nature. This is the proof. No one is actually really doing anything. Prahlad Maharaj gives a beautiful prayer in his prayers from the Shingadev. I can't remember the details. It's a really good verse. So he says, everything in this material world is done by the modes. The desires they're having, the goals they're setting for themselves, the activities they're performing, the food that they're eating. In this way, he delineates like the whole situation. Everything's just being done by the modes of nature. No one is actually independently thoughtful. Many times persons think, like, I'm an individual, I'm unique. This is a very popular misconception in the modern world. I always joke about this. When you go to Belmont and Clark, you see a variety of people there. You know, the punks, the yuppies, the rockers, the gothic. And I say, everyone thinks they're very unique, but they're all at Belmont. They're so unique that they're all in the same place, you know, shopping at the same stores, eating the same food. Just with a different hairdo. That's it, you know. Someone's got an orange hairdo, someone. So they're all thinking that they're very, very unique individuals. But actually, and then, of course, when they see the devotees there distributing books, you know, they could probably give the same argument. Why are you here? Anyway, we have our understanding as well. So in this way, you can see no one is thoughtful, actually. Only thoughtful jivas, they're called as udita vivek, which means they have awakened intelligence by hearing from sadhus generally. By suffering combined with the hearing process, they have an awakened intelligence. Then they will not suggest such things because they're thinking about it. Whereas the rest of the conditioned souls are just being conducted by the modes of material nature. They're not independently thoughtful. It's what, just like Krishna makes the same point in Gita. What is that verse? Kamai shaishter hita gyana prapadyante anya devataha. That their intelligence is stolen by lust and desire, so they're worshipping some devataha. Tam tam niyamam astaya prakrita niyatasvaya. And then they're following the nyamas, that means the rules and regulations. What prakriti according to their nature. So they're thinking that I'm choosing to worship Lord Shiva. No, you're in the mode of ignorance, and because that worship is compatible with the mode in which you're situated, you're worshiping Lord Shiva. You're not independent. Now, one is independently thoughtful. They're just being conducted by the modes. So that's why that happens. We're all under the modes of material nature. Therefore, we have to learn shastras and hear shastra and repeat that to one another. Otherwise, our statements often tend to be without cognition, product of the modes of material nature, and very bewildering and misleading. Like that.
Yeah, thanks. I guess in a society in which many individuals have no problems or don't see any problems taking an animal body in their next life, like if you bring up the idea of reincarnation, I think it'd be cool to be a dog, or you know, if that's the type of consciousness, then that makes sense how the modes are simply acting.
And the modes
so
are,
much.
Who in their right mind would say such foolishness? They had it on the Hare Krishna Today videos, very old videos, and then at the Festival of India, they were asking different people what they want to be in their next life if reincarnation is true. And one lady said, I want to be a tiger. You know, it was very hilarious. We're so foolish. It's just the mode of nature acting. I can see you're in the mode of passion. And then someone says, I want to be a pig. Don't think it's not possible. Under the modes of nature, anything is possible. Anything is possible under the modes of material nature. Any idea, any foolish concept is possible under the modes of nature. Okay, you want to last comment?
I found a way to get people to think is, you know, sometimes they'll come up to you and they say, how are you? And I say, well, the face is the index of the mind. And that kind of throws them off. And then I'll say something like, well, you'll never know even if I tell you, you know, just to keep them thinking. But Bhakti Siddhanta said that, the face is the index of the mind. No. So, you know, like you say, a lot of glib conversation, you know, just doesn't mean anything.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.